Born poor and raised on the tough streets of Brooklyn, New York, Mike is the quintessential self-made man. He served with the 101st Airborne as a forward air controller during the Vietnam War. He is a passionate Harley-Davidson rider and has been inducted into the Motorcycle Freedom Fighters Hall of Fame. He ran for mayor of San Diego. He is a patriot and loves the United States of America. This is the podcast about bringing a new passion and unity to the conservative party. With a mix of Harley rides, cigars, veterans affairs, and his true love and wife, Petrina, his rock and roll girl. Welcome to the Roll Right Radio Podcast. Here's New York Mike.
Black denim trousers and motorcycle boots and a black leather jacket with his name on the back. He does a patriotic podcast called Roll Right Radio. His name is New York Mike, and welcome to the show.
This is Roll Right Radio. I'm New York Mike.
Hey, America, this is Cash Patel, and I'd love it if you listen to Roll Right Radio with my man, New York Mike. Please subscribe to the podcast and start listening to every episode because we're just getting going, and it's going to be a hell of a ride.
Roll Right Radio. I'm New York Mike, and we're at the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. The capital. Here we are. We've been riding around the country. Boston was special. What's interesting is coming from Boston, seeing the history of the Revolutionary War, the lives that were given up, the sacrifices made, the great orators of the Revolution, Thomas Paine, Benjamin Franklin, Samuel Adams, their resting place, the cemeteries, looking at the place where the Boston Massacre took place. And you see all the history, what created America. And then you come here. What is America? What's America today? Not that Boston isn't. It started there and it just rolled out everywhere. The Boston Tea Party, the shot heard around the world in 1775. It's just the history. You could feel that there were people there who just said, enough, we're going to break the chains. No more rule by the king. No more are we going to be subjects. We're going to become citizens. No more. And they did it. They paid a price. In the country, after that Revolutionary War, you get such a sense of it. Then we get on the bikes and we ride. We stopped over at Steve Prager's house. And he got the guys together from Jersey and New York, and they met us, and we had lunch at Steve's house, at the Rolling Thunder crew. It was kind of cool. And then we come here to Washington, where I'm anticipating this podcast with Cash Patel tonight. Cash was the former Deputy Secretary of Defense under Trump. Great guy. Young guy. Great guy. And I'm so looking forward to it. And I come here, and as we travel around the country, we see the people, we get the sense of everything going on between what happened, the debacle of leaving Afghanistan, leaving Americans behind. Now, I want to say something, leaving Las Vegas, I said, it's not funny. You can't make a joke of these things. You can't smile when you think about it, but you can when you think about the heroics of the American people, the veterans, the private organizations that went over there to try to get these people free. And you say, this is the connection between the founding fathers and the founding people in the whole Boston, New England area. The whole Revolutionary War fought from Boston to Valley Forge. And then you see, it's not all the people. It's not even a majority of the people. It's just some of the people. Those people that rise up and inspire everybody else to get behind them. And here we are. We're in D.C. And I've been at D.C. a few times since the election. Twice, actually. In November with Petrina. And then on January 6th. And here I am at the Capitol looking forward to having a talk with Cash tonight at Shelley's. And getting this feel for, where are we in America? What's going on? What are we going to talk about? What am I going to say? What am I going to ask Cash? Cash was a knowledgeable guy who had a real sense of when things are going right, when Trump was the president. Yeah, they were complaining. There was a lot of issues. You know, they didn't like what he said, his tweets and this and that. But look at where the country was. We would have never left Americans behind in Afghanistan. We would never have left Afghan friends behind. We would never have taken the military out before we were totally gone. It would not have happened. And it's not just Trump. It's Trump and his whole crew, Cash Patel, all the rest of those guys. They would never have let. How did this happen? In order for that to happen, you almost have to mess it up on purpose. It's just, you get a sense what really happened right here, right now. And on Friday, 20 years since the attack on September 11th, the attack on America by the Muslim extremists, planned out in Afghanistan, set up Afghanistan, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia. What have we accomplished? Well, we've accomplished a lot. I don't want to be cynical. It's easy when you don't get the absolute result that you want to be cynical, but you can't be, you shouldn't be, because we achieved something. We achieved a lot in 20 years. It just got all thrown in the crapper at the end. This Biden administration, the way they handle it, thinks it's gone. They threw away this opportunity. 20 years, we could have walked away with our heads held high with our dignity and honor. And in so many ways we do. Look, September 11th. Man, I look back at 20 years of insecurity, whining, complaining, trying to get our footing, in my opinion, as Americans, trying to get a sense of the feel. What was it that those founding fathers, the people in Boston, the people 1775 when all this began, 1776 when they often declared our independence, what was in their mind? Did they want to have the ability to say, well, if we want communism, we should explore communism? Is that what they wanted? Did they have a sense of what capitalism was, free enterprise? What was their definition of freedom? I think we should be thinking about that and exploring, trying to understand that. Because I think they knew when they talked about freedom, breaking loose from a king, from, I don't want to say it, an oppressor, but breaking loose and being free to start your own business and put together your own resources, build your own cities, villages, towns, communities, do it the way you want it, do it with local governments, not some centralized, dominating person that just tells everybody what the rules are going to be from all over. No. It was the United States, each state independent, each state a separate state, a separate entity unto itself, and united. So there were some things in common that, you know, yeah, you want to have a central guiding force, but not a king. And that's the difference. I think we have to understand what that difference is. Do we want this all-powerful central government with a king-like president? Or do we want to have the autonomy of states? So it's so different in Boston than it is in New York City or Washington, D.C. or San Diego or L.A. Each one has a different identity, a different sense of the feel. And they should have a different autonomous government. Anyway, I'm going to be talking to Cash Patel tonight. He walked here to the Capitol. Robin and I walked all over the malls. We get down to the Capitol as I walk down Constitution Avenue and came down here. A certain emptiness. Part of it because there's no one around this week. Yesterday being Labor Day and Friday being September 11th. And that emptiness of this, I didn't feel the life in the buildings. I just didn't feel it. I'm not feeling it. I want to feel it. I want to feel the energy. I want to feel this amazing American experiment and people governing themselves, self-government. There's a power that emanates from people. You feel it when you walk down the streets in Boston. You feel it when you're walking down the street. Not that I'm a Boston aficionado. I'm not. But I love the history. And for some reason, I'm here today. I've been here so many times. I'm just not feeling it. I want to feel the energy in Washington, D.C., where the central government is empowering all other 50 states and every municipality and every citizen to be free to express themselves, to say what they want to say. Our First Amendment, the freedom to speak and pray the way you want. Our Second Amendment, freedom to own guns, bear arms, and not be infringed upon by a government. That's what I want to feel when I'm here. I'm not feeling it, Robert.
Well, my thing about this rushing of the Capitol building, I think the whole thing was stupid.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing's bullshit. I don't think anybody should have rushed the Capitol. I think it was a stupid move. I think it was literally one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my life. You have to have a respect for the Capitol. You have to have a respect for the buildings. You have to have a respect for America. You have to have a respect for our chain of command. And I just think the whole thing was God bless America.
Well, I agree with your analysis. If I didn't agree, I'd say I didn't agree. Hey, guys. But I do agree they weren't told not to come in, that the Capitol Police had no perimeter set up and didn't quite discourage them enough. What they did was foolish. And it was also criminal. You don't breach the capital of the United States. They should have known better. Yeah, shame on them.
It's my personal opinion that if you desecrate the capital, you desecrate the soul of America. And I think it's a disgrace. I really do. I'm embarrassed for anybody and everybody that participated in that bullshit. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Agreed.
It's hard for people to believe in anything. There is no certainty. So they're trying to believe in something. And people say, why did people fall in line with Trump? And I think personally, as a non-political person, they fell in line because they were all hoping and dreaming for something great. And he made that statement of make America great again. And I think that elicited hopes of a bygone era, and it gave them something to believe in greater than themselves. And I think that's the mark of a leader. And I don't necessarily know if that is the current feeling in Washington, D.C. right now. Is this a leader we can believe in and put our faith in? And I think that's a dilemma for every American, and I have compassion, sympathy and empathy for everybody, because there is absolutely no certainty in this world right now except for God.
What happened in 245 years of going from a bunch of people that they were subjects, they were British subjects, and they said, enough of this, we don't want a king, we don't want to be subjects, we want to be citizens, we want our own country, Declaration of Independence, a constitution. I mean, the first time ever, government for, by, and of the people. There's no king. We have a president, but that president's a president of the United States. Each state, each locality, each municipality, with each human being on their own, free to worship the God they want, to speak the way they want to speak, say what they want to say. And then we come to a cancel culture. We come to censorship every place we go. We come to what is still the greatest country in the world and a country that's worth fighting for. When you leave a place like Boston to see where it started, to see what these guys gave up and what they had and what they fought for, they fought for what we had, an idea of a nation where, endowed by our Creator with inalienable rights, endowed by our Creator. Who ever thought of that before America was founded as a country, 1776? We're not going to give it up. We're not going to lose this country. We're not going to turn our backs and walk away and say, okay, we're going to be canceled. We're going to be censored. We're not. And here in Washington, D.C., there are still people in this government, in this place, this capital of America, which will never be a state. It's the capital. It's the District of Columbia. And there are people here who still believe in those concepts, in this idea of freedom, individual freedom, endowed by our Creator with those rights. And last year, 2 years ago, it's been a year and a half, when Robert Patrick and I rode across the country like we do every year, the Rolling Thunder. It was actually Rolling to Remember then, for Memorial Day. And we got here, we got to the White House, rode with the AmVets, who were great, and we met some of the finest people I've ever met. We met the people that were the foundation of the Trump presidency. And these guys, they were guys and gals, they were so oppressive. And they were all young. We're talking guys in their 30s, early 40s, maybe. It was just incredible to be around them. These kids are smart. These kids are tough. And we've stayed in touch with some of them. And one of them is here with me today, and I'm thrilled to have him here. His name is Kash Patel. Kash, I'm going to let you talk. I'm going to shut up at some point. I promise. But you became the Deputy Secretary of Defense. But before that, you were a federal prosecutor. You became part of the Department of Justice. You traveled around the world. I mean, you fought against terrorists. You locked them up, put them away. Your history is amazing, but I want everybody out there and Roll Right Radio in America to hear it from you. Let me introduce for a minute Kash Patel. I'm going to ask him some questions. We're going to talk, and I hope we get to do this again.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're a busy guy. You're trying to save America.
No.
I mean, you're there, man. But give us a little bit of Devin Nunes thing and all the rest of it.
Well, first of all, New York Mike, I consider you a friend, and that's a very kind introduction. And to see you and Robert back in Washington paying tribute to our vets, you're a vet. And you talk about the work I did. The work I did is not possible without the work you did and our vets did. And that's why you encourage another generation of Americans to follow in your footsteps. Because you fought in Vietnam. You fought when it really mattered. Now you're getting the message out there for Americans that the fight is still worth it. And I'm really appreciative to be on with you. And we're not going to do this once. We're going to do this a lot. This is going to be fun. I can't wait. So I am super appreciative to be here with you and talk to Roll Right Radio. This is great. I'm so happy that you and Robert took the time to come out and hang out with me and have a cigar here. And yeah, my career, nothing like the guys that came before me. I'm just trying to keep up with you guys. But I was a terrorism prosecutor for a while, prosecuting terrorists all over America and the world. Then I joined the military as a civilian to do targeting with our special forces guys, finding bad guys around the world and taking them out. And then I was lucky enough to join the House Intelligence Committee with Devin Nunes, who's the chairman. And I spearheaded the Russiagate investigation, which, as you now know, was the biggest scandal in presidential history, in U.S. history, because they being an opposing political party, tried to steal a presidential election by pumping fake information into our intelligence community. And we were lucky enough to fight that and get our message out. So that was a great experience that I had with Devin. And then I went on to the Trump administration to run his counterterrorism program and serve as a lead officer in the intelligence community under him. And then I finished off, as you said, as chief of staff for the Department of Defense. So my inspiration is you guys. What we do pales in comparison to what you did, but I'm happy to be here talking to you, and we'll do it a lot.
I do appreciate it. Kash, we know what happened. There's going to come a moment. We all believe there's going to come that aha moment when the truth of what happened in 2016, the shenanigans, the FISA court, the Steele dossier. Yeah, I mean, all of this thing, the Mueller investigation, 2 years, $30, $40 million, 18, 20 attorneys, all with one goal, to upset Trump. When is this ever going to be exposed to the American people? This is not a partisan thing. This is about the country we love. I don't care if it was Obama, I'd feel the same way. If he was cheated, if he was rushed out of town, if they found impeachment things that didn't really exist. And now we can look back, and obviously you're still working and uncovering, and Devin Nunes is working. And we're going to get We're going to get Congress back in just a little over a year. It's coming up. I mean, we see what these people are doing. They're bringing us to the brink of disaster. What happened in Afghanistan, if that's not proof of the pudding, well, we've seen the inflation. We've seen they closed down the pipelines. They closed down oil refineries. They closed. I mean, everything they're doing is backwards and wrong. Now, I know militarily you could probably explain what went wrong in Afghanistan, but are we going to have that moment when we look at this? And even my Democrat friends out there, the Democrat, the people that vote for the other side can look at this and say, wow, that was wrong. What happened?
I think you're right. Look, I think we're having that moment, and you got to layer that moment with voices in America that matter like yours. And going back to the Russiagate investigation, you're talking about when is America going to learn? Well, we put out a report in the House Intelligence Committee that anyone can read. And honestly, the thing that best sums up our work under Devin Nunes for the House Intelligence Committee is this movie called The Plot Against the President. If you want to know what happened, it's in there and it's well laid out. And what we found was that a political party in the United States of America, if you can believe it, put false information before a federal court and wiretapped a president of the United States and his associates and withheld exculpatory information against that court and then basically committed a fraud to go up and wiretap his associates because they thought that President Trump had colluded with the Russian government and Putin to steal an election. And our findings and the truth show just the opposite. So it's there. You can see it. You can read it. We found it. And not even the media can ignore it now. And it took us a few years to get there. But fast forwarding to Afghanistan, you're right. Look, as war is sometimes a necessary evil, and it's not the stuff that movies are made of. It's the stuff that they don't talk about in movies that matters. When you go over there, you serve and you wear the cloth of our nation and you say, your freedom is as important to us as ours is to us. And that's what it was for Afghanistan for so long. And that's why when President Trump got elected, he said, look, I don't think we should be in these forever wars. 20 years in Afghanistan is too long, but you can't just leave. You can't just evacuate and say, we're done. And so what President Trump said, he said, look, let's leave smartly. Let's have a conditions-based withdrawal. Let's get all of our American citizens out of there. But more importantly, if you can believe it, safeguarding American citizens was, we can't leave Afghanistan to implode. We have to get a government there that works for the people of Afghanistan. And that has to include some of the Taliban. And people don't like hearing that. But you need a commander-in-chief like we had in President Trump who instilled fear in those people in Afghanistan to make sure, yeah, we'll give you assistance along the way, but you can't kill Americans. You can't support Al-Qaeda. You cannot be funded by people that want to do harm to innocent civilians, not just Americans. And that's what we had with President Trump. And he had a withdrawal plan that I'm proud of to have executed where we lost no Americans in 18 months. And we withdrew down to 2,500 troops in Afghanistan, the lowest number since the war on terror began. And we lost the election and we handed that national security mission, not a political mission. The national security mission was handed off to the incoming administration because that's the right thing to do. And we said, these are our plans. This is the effort we've made. These are the agreements. You can continue them. You can take parts of them and make it better. Do it based on the intelligence you learn as this process goes along. And unfortunately, what happened is they just surrendered Afghanistan to the Taliban. And it took them, what, 2 weeks to take over? 13 service members dead, a dignified transfer. And now we have to bury more Americans. And look what's happening now. We have Americans stranded in Afghanistan. We have our weapons, $85 billion worth of weapons, going to terrorist organizations running around Afghanistan looking to hurt us. That's what happens when you don't have a plan. That's what happens when you evacuate for political reasons, which is what happened here. And it's going to take a long time to fix this whole notion that we're finally out of Afghanistan because we evacuated. That doesn't mean Afghanistan is going to be a peaceful place. It's not. They need help. And we had a plan in place. And I just don't think this administration has thought of it based on the intelligence. And too many lead figures in this administration are politicizing the national security mission, which is, like you said, it's not a Democrat, Republican, independent thing. It's a U.S. thing. Right. And people think just because I work for Trump, they forget I worked for Obama. They forget I worked for three different attorneys generals. It didn't matter who you worked for. It's the mission mattered more, like you did when you served. And that's what we have to tell people, that story. And we got to fight for it for the next year till we get to the midterms. And I think we're on the right track, but we're going to need a lot more of these sessions with you and I to talk about it. And I'd love to do it.
Yeah. Let me ask you a couple of things, because my concern is, as a Vietnam vet, we came back from Vietnam, we saw what happened to the country. And it was hard to rebuild the military. People don't remember. But the way we were treated, the way the military was treated, it was horrible. The real issue for America was rebuilding the military, the morale. You had to find the leaders. And we were fortunate. And I've said this on podcasts, I've said it before, the difference between Afghanistan and Vietnam, the difference between Kabul and Saigon is that we were never concerned. I love those South Vietnamese people. It broke my heart to see what happened as a veteran. Oh, man, it was depressing. It was horrible. But I never worried about the North Vietnamese coming here and blowing buildings. So here it's different.
It's different.
And there's something else. And we're going to talk about this some more because I think it's important. There's something else, because as Vietnam vets, we knew that there were thousands, as many as 3,000, maybe a little more, POWs, missing in action, unaccounted for, that we left. We left them. We said, wait a minute. These guys are there. They're still prisoners of war in North Vietnam or in China, because China was connected with North Vietnam.
Yeah.
You got to remember, Ho Chi Minh would have been a prisoner in China for years, and the history of that. So we don't know where they were, but we knew they were alive. And it was an issue that we brought to America. Rolling Thunder, all the rest of it, that POW MIA flag that flies all over, right under the American flag, on the Capitol, at the White House, everywhere. Now, when you had the plan in place to exit from Afghanistan, your plan included that there was going to be an agreement, those conditions would be met. And the thought that we would leave Americans behind, the only concern was, how are we going to identify and get out the translators and the other allies we had within Afghanistan? So that was it. And then all of a sudden, the Biden administration just turned this thing upside down. They took the military out. They gave a Bagram airfield. They did everything backwards. If anything could be done wrong, they did it wrong. You almost had to have a plan to mess it up as bad as they did. So we now have something in common which we never wanted to have with these veterans of today. And I love these veterans today. I love the people who are serving today are just the best. But we didn't want to have POWs and MIAs in common with anybody. Our mantra was leave no American behind. And that's something that became part of the American soul. The fighting warrior soul of America, leave no American behind. And now we have. And so this year on Memorial Day, we're going to be talking about POWs and MIAs. And sadly, these Afghan vets are going to be right there with us talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
It's horrible. But we have to now be talking about rebuilding the morale, rebuilding that passion for this country that you have, that all these other veterans that I've met, so many of them have. And yet, we're going to talk about this in the next episodes. 22 suicides a day. As bad as we were treated coming back from Vietnam, as bad and horrible as it was, my friends, we didn't talk about what happened to Joe. He shot himself. What happened to Mary? All these guys know somebody.
Yeah.
Who committed. I mean, it's horrible. We've got to overcome that. Cash. As the chief of staff of the Secretary of Defense, this had to be things that you were thinking about. And now, is it even more important going forward?
Look, I agree. Listen, I served President Trump in leadership roles as the Deputy Director of National Intelligence, and then later over at the Department of Defense, where we were charged with the Afghan withdrawal process to implement his plan based on intelligence. And his priorities were always the same. America first, American citizens first. Support and take care of our veterans, our soldiers serving and those that have served. Because like you said, you cannot have American veterans who serve this country coming home without a support structure, without a family, without a network, be it Rolling Thunder or what have you. So they have jobs to come home to, a community to come home to. And there are tens of millions of Americans that feel as passionate about this as you and I do. And President Trump did that. He revamped the Veterans Administration system for the better. He made it a big part of his platform.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything to do with the VA mission, but it was led by some brave men. And he corrected a lot of wrongs, reduced wait times, gave vets access to psychiatrists and medical procedures that were long overdue. so they're not waiting months just to go in and see a doctor. Our vets should not be waiting at all, anywhere, anytime. And there should be people that they can reach out to, like you and like Robert and like other veterans who have made it successfully in America after serving, and show them there's a way forward. And when they need help, we got to give it to them. And you have been giving it to them. And President Trump laid out a plan to give it to them. But unfortunately, what we're seeing in Afghanistan, we're going to see those echoes throughout time here for the next 1, 2, 3, 5 years, because people who fought and died there, people who fought there for years, are coming home and they're saying, what did we do in Afghanistan to up and leave the citizens of our country in Afghanistan? And what about our Afghan allies? What about our NATO partners? We just up and left the largest theater of war we've been in U.S. history. That's unfortunately what has happened under the leadership that we're now in. And you ask, can we get it back? What do we do to get it back? And I think this is what we need to do to get it back. Educate Americans on folks that have served in the past. And I'm not saying everybody's got to sign up and serve. That's not it at all.
No.
That's not it. It's not for everybody. And that's fine. That's the purpose of service. When you have a country that allows you to voluntarily serve, you're saying, I'm going in so you don't have to. But when those guys and girls come back, they got to be coming back to a country they signed up to serve. And right now it looks bleak, but it's not insurmountable. It's not a problem that we fix overnight. We're going to run it into 2022 and beyond. And you have to have a Congress willing to support your funding, your legislation for military. And President Trump made it a priority. Yeah, I authorized and helped him usher in the biggest Defense Department budget in U.S. history. I am proud of that. We are proud of that because it went to the military. Now, some say we shouldn't be spending so many billions on the U.S. military. Okay, where else should we be spending it? The first priority is the defense of this country. And so I agree with President Trump that we need to have that robust budget, but we also need to have a plan in place. You can't just throw billions of dollars at the industrial complex. That's not serving America. Well, you got to put it in the soldiers that are serving, the uniform, the National Guard, the reserve, law enforcement. Law enforcement's a big part of the military community. People don't realize that. I know you know that, but you have to have Americans realize that these men and women serve, and you have to inspire future generations to serve. That's the biggest thing, right? Afghanistan's not over. And I hate to say it, you know, we ran a robust counterterrorism mission. We got rid of Baghdadi. We got rid of Soleimani. We got rid of Mar. President Trump said, wipe out the emirs of ISIS and kill al-Qaeda's senior leadership. And we executed that mission. But that mission is attached to Afghanistan because that's the hotbed for al-Qaeda. Now you see ISIS resurging when we're not there and they're using our weapons and money against us. And that's what we have to convince America to say, you might not like these forever wars. And I'm not saying go back in Afghanistan, but there was a smarter way to leave. And President Trump was directing that exit plan with conditions-based withdrawal while talking to, yeah, the Afghans and the Taliban, saying, you have to negotiate a peace settlement. We can't be here forever. We're going to help you. But now we just up and left. And now there's nothing there in Afghanistan. And the Taliban has taken over. And now the Taliban is asking for U.S. funding to help run Afghanistan because America has paid the government of Afghanistan for the last 20 years to operate, because they don't have the funds to do so. Now, are we going to give money to the Taliban? That's the question I ask everybody that I talk to. Is this administration going to fund the Taliban government in Afghanistan without a U.S. presence in country? And I don't know the answer.
But you mentioned Soleimani. You were in the room with...
I did the Baghdadi raid.
The Baghdadi raid.
Yeah.
That you handled that. You did that.
Well, I would say that I was a small side foot soldier running counterterrorism at the White House for the president. I was fortunate enough being in the Situation Room when we did that raid in late October of 2019. And to see the National Command Authority executed with precision, to watch our boys on the ground, our special forces operators, go in and flawlessly execute a mission of that magnitude and difficulty was one of the most humbling moments of my life. And to know that we killed Baghdadi. And here's something that most people don't know. Baghdadi was responsible for so many American deaths and so many deaths of our allies, but he kidnapped American kids. No, most people don't know about the Foleys, the Sotloffs, the Kassigs, and the Muellers. These were American children doing aid work or journalists who were beheaded by ISIS and Baghdadi. And President Trump, after we killed him, said, I want the numbers and names of the family members. And I walked him down at 10 p.m. at night on a Saturday evening to the White House, to the president in the East Wing of the White House. And he wanted them. And he said, Cash, I'm calling these families directly because we got Baghdadi tonight for them. And he's right. He cares about the reasons why we go to such great lengths to remove these villains from planet Earth. And that was just one example that I was fortunate to be a very small part of.
He called each and every family of each victim of Baghdadi.
Yeah.
Amazing. So now, okay, we have a job to do. I know a lot of guys and gals who are serving today, okay? Marines, Navy SEALs. These are the best. These are committed people. They're not going to sit around and let them fall into this depression. They're going to rise up.
Yeah.
They're going to overcome. They're going to get off the X, as my friend Jay Crit says. Off the X.
Off the X.
Move forward and do what it takes to bring America back, led by this great military. There's a lot of other stuff going on. And you mentioned about funding. Isn't China now going to be funding Afghanistan? And isn't Afghanistan's funding from their poppy fields, the heroin crops?
Yeah.
And why haven't they focused on burning those crops? Because, damn it, they're selling that heroin to our kids. It's coming in. 53 years ago in Vietnam, I laid down on the napalm, baby. And that was a long time ago. Today, they could do it more efficiently, effectively. Why not do that? That's my first question. My second question in the opposite direction is, don't you think the Chinese are going to have their hands full trying to deal with these Afghans? No one else could. Why will they?
I think taking those in reverse, and most people aren't talking about that, the Chinese and the Russians have waited for our retreat in Afghanistan. They've waited for this day because now they're flying their people and their equipment in and taking our equipment. And they're publicly telling the world the Chinese and the Russians are going to stand up the Taliban as a government of Afghanistan. And that is one of the gravest national security threats to America right now that no one's talking about.
Right.
But they're already there doing it because they're going after the mineral rights in Afghanistan. And the one thing the Chinese and the Russians do that we don't is they don't have any ethics when it comes to this stuff. They don't abide by the rules of law that we do.
Right.
And so that's the difference between us and them. And they're going in and they're going to take what they want and they're going to give money to our enemies. And it's going to hurt America's interest in the long run. Now, the other question about why did we destroy the poppy fields and the equipment? Well, that was President Trump's plan. That was the last component of the plan. When the Afghans are running their own government in conjunction with the Taliban, because people don't like it, but they're like, why would you talk to the Taliban? Who are we going to talk to in Afghanistan? They own half the country. It's their country. I'm not saying they're all great people and a lot of them are terrorists, but you got to get rid of those people and allow some of their leaders to negotiate with an Afghan civilian population to rule together. And once that was all in place, then we would go use our overhead capabilities, which were extensive out of places like Bagram, to remove equipment. And whatever equipment we couldn't move, we would blow up. And the poppy fields and the opium fields that are responsible for Afghans' economy would have been burned, would have been obliterated, because we knew where they were. But you have to have a plan in place to execute those separate lines of effort. And the difference between a plan like we had and what you see right now is you see a reactionary evacuation in Afghanistan, and we just up and left. And there's no plan to destroy the weapons. There's no plan to destroy the opium fields. And the drug trade is now going to mount. And the narco-terrorism trafficking industry in Afghanistan is going to rise again. We spent years combating that mission because we didn't want the narco-traffickers to fund terrorism. But more importantly, we didn't want the narcotics in the world. We didn't want the kids, not just America, but we didn't want it in Europe. We didn't want it in Southeast Asia. We didn't want it in the Pacific. Nobody wants our kids killed by opium. And unfortunately, there's probably going to be a rise in the drug trade because there's no one there to police it.
Last question. We have an election coming up. We're going to take back Congress. We have to. We're going to take back Congress. And I know you're going to be someplace. And after that, I don't want to think too far down the road. 2022 is right in front of us. It's the job right now. It's a little over a year away. The campaigning is starting now. We've got to start working it. I'm going to rely on you to tell me which is the Republican. You know, the word I hate most when we talk about politics is the word rhino. You start labeling guys, right? If they're there, they're there. I want Liz Cheney gone, but until she's gone, she's the Republican. That's the way it is. I want this guy, Adam Kinzinger. I want him gone. But if the people in the local election area where he lives in Nebraska, if they put him back in, he's a Republican until he changes. I don't want to call names to people. I don't want to get into that thing. But I want to know who I should be looking at, supporting, talking to, maybe sending a donation here or there. Who's going against Cheney? Who's going against Adam Kinzinger? On the other side, You know, the Adam Schiff's and the one with the Chinese fan girlfriend, Pumpkin Swallow. I don't care. They can vote in, vote out, do it. We have to take care of our own.
Yeah.
So I want to know that. I want to be able to talk to you. I want to hear people talk about politics when we get the chance. But right now, one of the last things, and certainly it's not the least important, it may be the most important thing right now. We have a whole bunch of Afghan refugees that just haphazardly thrown out and gotten out, and it's right to have gotten them out, but we haven't vetted them. And there's a lot of talk. I've heard both sides, Republicans say, oh, we got to get rid of these people. We don't want them in our towns. They're dumping them in Cleveland and this place. But these were our allies. How do we separate the wheat from the chaff? How do we find out, and how important is it to do that right?
Look, it's critical. You're hitting all the topics that most people aren't talking about in the mainstream media. The vetting process, as we call it, to scrub, and I agree with you, having served and having been on the ground in every theater of war we have, I've worked with interpreters, I've worked with contractors from local countries. These people need to be saved. These people helped us. We can't just leave them there. But the problem with evacuating in the fashion we did and moving 50,000 people to American bases in the matter of 10 days without implementing, America has a rigorous vetting system in our intelligence community. This process takes time. These parole visas take time because not only do you vet the person, but you vet their acquaintances, you vet their relationships, you do a scrub for derogatory information. And this is the most glaring thing that came out today. Secretary of State Blinken said, we did not vet them on the front end. We're going to do it on the back end. I mean, just pause on that for a second. Our Secretary of State is saying these tens of thousands of refugees that have come here, we're now going to start vetting them when they're on American soil. Look, we tried this in 2011-12 when we did the Iraq surge, and we moved thousands of refugees over to America only to find out that not most of them, but a small number of them were actually ISIS, and we had to go find them. We spent time finding in America. And my fear is that when you move 50,000 people out of a theater of war, the enemy knows that you're moving these guys. So what are they doing? They're probably putting their guys, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and otherwise, on these military transports and getting a free ride to America. And as our Secretary of State just said, we didn't vet them on the front end. And that is going to be something that you and I have to watch carefully and educate America on why we didn't do it on the front end. Because that's the job of the government, is to not bring evil to America, but screen it ahead of time and say, okay, we know your relationships. Sorry, we can't take you now, but we can take this family of interpreters that we did work with, who we did vet, and who our military knows and our intelligence communities knows to be good people. Those people should be here.
But could they do it without causing more harm?
My position, President Trump's position, was you have to vet them before they leave places like Afghanistan. Doing it in reverse, like the Secretary of State Blinken is now saying, I don't know. Maybe they have some magic plan in place to do it, but these guys are on American military bases. Legally, they can't stay there. They're going to start entering our communities. Are we going to start tracking 50,000 people in America? What's law enforcement doing about it? And that's not to saddle law enforcement with it, but they weren't prepared ahead of time to handle it because they didn't have the opportunity to say, let me run a background check on Mr. and Mrs. X from Kandahar or where have you. And that's what you and I are going to be talking about for months. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope you come back in a month and tell me, hey, we went 100%, all 50,000 are great people. That would be the perfect situation. And I hope we get lucky.
I think you and I both agree that we want Biden to be successful. I want Blinken to be successful.
I'm the biggest cheerleader of, as you are, of the national security mission of America. It doesn't matter. There's an election and there's a result of that election and there's new leadership. We handed over a transition to that new leadership to prepare them for the national security mission. I'm the biggest cheerleader of that national security mission. Be it Joe Biden, be it Secretary Blinken,
whoever's
in the White House.
Yeah.
If they don't succeed, then America is failing its national security mission. So they're not politics.
And don't get me wrong. I think Biden got to go. I think what he's done is treasonous. I think it's terrible. While he's there, while he's president, we've got to at least hope that he does it right. We've got 50,000 or more of these refugees. Let's hope they can do it right, front end, back end, somehow, some way. I said that was going to be my last question there, and is, Cash, we came in here tonight, I met some of your buddies. You guys are all hockey players. I didn't know you were a hockey guy, man. But you know what I did, though? Because I heard you on the show, take no graph, or give no graph. Yeah. You know, I guess that's hockey. Yeah. You guys are cool, man. And you're still playing hockey. And here's what you guys said. They said, here's this guy. We play hockey every Sunday night. These guys play college hockey. I mean, they're real serious guys. And they play up at Lake Placid every year, the whole big deal. And they said, yeah, that guy Cash, man, he's all over the world. And he shows up Sunday night for hockey.
Hey, man, look, and I appreciate you bringing up the hockey. Look, you have to have a passion in life outside of your profession. Obviously, your family comes first, family, country, God. And for me, hockey has been what sustained me. And President Trump even would joke with me. He's like, it's Sunday night. Where's Cash? Well, he's at the hockey rep. It was just all out. You know, you need to be reminded of your community and your friends that are important to you. So you know what you're fighting for. And it's great that we got to hang out with a couple of my hockey guys and you and make jokes about having fun time in the Sean Avery podcast. But like you, you have a passion for riding motorcycles, for supporting veterans by doing that. But it's also something you and Robert enjoy tremendously. And for me, it just happens to be ice hockey. So I still play and I still coach, and hopefully they'll let me keep doing all that.
So I'm going to give a shout out to Rhino and Giorno. And it's Rhino. Nothing to do with politics. His name is Reinbeck. They call one of you guys are called nicknames because you got to talk to each other on the ice.
Yeah.
And you can't go to the whole name, you know. Hey, Cash, you're going to have a nickname. It was kind of funny. It was great talking to those guys.
Yeah.
It was obviously great seeing you again. Thank you for being on the Roll Right podcast. I appreciate it. And I'm sure everybody out there was appreciated your insight.
Thanks for having me, and I hope to be back real soon.
You got it. Hey, I'm New York Mike. This is Roll Right Radio. Listen, on a separate note, please subscribe. We love our subscribers. We're working hard to build this podcast. Pod Stars, our podcast production company, is doing a great job. I love what I do. I like being in touch with everybody. Hopefully, we're going to help change the world. We're going to help get that Congress back in 2 years. We've got to do it. We all have our shoulders to the wheel. We love this country. We love America. So when I say to you guys, Roll Right Radio listeners, we're all patriots. God bless America. Thanks for listening. See you soon.
We're rolling right. This is the Roll Right Radio podcast.